You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. Now to our show called In the Garden with UC Master Gardeners. Hi, Dina. This is exciting. Welcome to August in the Garden.
I know. August, I have to be honest. It's good to have you here, Katrina, in this nice air-conditioned space because August is not my favorite month in the garden. How about you?
Well, let's put it this way. I know what time the sun comes up because I'm in the garden really early.
I hear you. To all of our listeners, it is not the best month to be outside in your garden, particularly if, as Katrina said, you're not out there early. But there are some things that you can do to prepare your garden to survive the next 2 months, because August and September are usually pretty brutal.
Yes, so we want to keep the garden alive and we want to stay out of the heat.
Keep the garden alive and us from wilting.
Exactly.
So I guess first, let's recap some stuff we talked about last month in July, because we were anticipating this heat coming, and it did start in July, but if you were closer to the coast, it wasn't so bad in July because the coast usually still gets some of that overcast morning. So one of the things that you can do if you didn't do it last month is you can mulch your whole garden. And when we say mulch, we're talking about laying some organic material on top of the soil. And the benefit of mulch is it keeps the water in, it keeps the soil cooler, and my favorite is it keeps the weeds down.
Exactly.
And the organic material can be found at the big box retailers, and it's called, if you're doing a vegetable garden, then I would get something that's called compost, labeled compost, or they label it garden soil. It's not really soil, it's compost. And I like to use that in the veggie garden because it's fine. It's not coarse. But if you're going to mulch in kind of permanent beds where you have a lot of shrubs, then you can use bark chips or shredded bark, things that are going to last longer because they're bigger and they won't decay.
And another reason why is because they're bigger. You don't want to be digging in your vegetable garden with these big chunks of compost, which is nice for putting around fruit trees and other places, but if you're in a vegetable garden or if you're replacing plants, we wouldn't be replacing so much right now.
Right. I'll never forget, my husband a number of years ago thought he was doing me a big favor, and he bought a big bag of bark chips and he mulched my strawberry bed with it. So I had to tell him that we're going to have to rake all of that out with our hands, because those bark chips, when it's time for the strawberries to come out, because we typically rotate them every 3 years and plant fresh, are not going to be decayed. They're still going to be bark chips, and I can't till those into the soil because they will steal nitrogen from the soil in order to facilitate their decaying. And when you steal nitrogen, you steal it from the plants. So anyway, we had to rake all those bark chips out of the strawberry bed. So we've never done that again. Now we mulch our strawberries with a straw, because that's a weed-free straw, because that's a great thing to use in veggie gardens also.
We use straw. I use straw in the vegetable gardens.
Yeah.
And I have noticed, because a lot of times I plant through the season, like every couple weeks. So we always have vegetables. And it is so noticeably the temperature of the soil, how moist it stays, just having that straw all around the vegetables. And I'm always pushing my water limit because I do have a lot of outside plants. And that straw has just been a godsend. And
it really helps.
It's easy to move around. You know where it is. And if you need to move a plant or, you know, dig a new plant in there, it's easy to get out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. No, I love that for vegetable gardens. I mean, it's great for flower gardens, too. It's just some folks might not like the look of it because it's a lighter color. And, you know, they may prefer something that's more earth tone.
Well, you know, it's funny. I never thought about, you know, I don't put it in my flower garden. I put it in my vegetable garden, and then I put compost in my flower garden.
Yeah, so isn't that funny?
I'm just, it just the way it was. I'm, you know, just thinking about that. I guess I'm one of those people that like the don't like the look of it in my flower garden,
right?
But I love the look of it in my
veggie garden. I know it's kind of funny, but you can use it either place, and I have, because when I've purchased an entire bale, my veggie garden is much smaller than yours, so I can't use a whole bale of straw in my veggie garden. So I have then used it to mulch under my fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't use it in the flower garden, but I've used it to mulch under the fruit trees just to get rid of it, you know, because these bales of straw are pretty big.
Yeah, I know. I've ordered like 5 of them.
Oh, my gosh. That's because you have such a big garden.
I have a big garden. And then, you know, I've stacked them. You know, like right now I don't want to use 2 that I stacked because it's an extra place when I go in the garden. I can sit my coffee cup and some tools.
Oh, that's cool.
And it just gave me a little extra room in the garden with 2 of them sitting there. And I'm like, those will be the last 2 I use.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I know when we were volunteering at the Farm and Food Lab out at the Gray Park, we often had bales of straw left over from an event that they would do in the fall. And we would actually use them as little seats, you know,
mm-hmm.
round and about through the garden. We would see folks sitting on them because they're just kind of seating wall height. So,
mm-hmm.
And of course, then kids climb on them and they're fun for lots of different things. But so, yeah, so mulching is the number one thing that you can do. And then the other thing, of course, is check your timers. You know, you got to make sure that your timers are coming on as much as you need, but not too much. And then also the other thing we suggest is cycling your sprinklers. And what that means is don't just run, you know, station 1 for 10 minutes. If you know that that station needs 10 minutes, then run it for 5 minutes and then have all the rest of your stations run and then have a second round of watering and run that for 5 minutes. So in total, you're getting 10 minutes of watering time, but you're allowing some space of time in between so that the water can soak in and not run off.
It just absorbs better.
Yeah. So that we call cycling. So I start mine at, you know, 5 a.m. and it takes, you know, a good hour and a half to get probably an hour to get through my property because it's big. And then I do a second round. But on some of the stations, it's only running for, you know, 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back and does another 2 minutes. So that's another way to make sure that you're getting the most bang for your buck out of your water.
I think Tina and I are both like, there's no such thing as runoff.
No.
It's just a crime.
That's a sin, you know.
I see runoff when I'm walking down the street or driving somewhere. I'm like, I want to knock on their door and say, you don't need to do that.
Yeah. And then there's another thing that you can do for your pots, which is probably especially important because a lot of us are going to take some trips, right? And you can't leave your pots unattended for a couple weeks. But one thing that I have started doing the last couple of years is I double pot my potted plants. And so I love the look of the clay pots, but they evaporate water, you know, pretty quickly. And so what I've taken to doing is when I need to repot one of my pretty clay pots, I get a plastic pot that will fit inside of it. And then I plant the new plants in that plastic pot and drop it in the clay pot.
You have saved me on that one. I learned that from you, Tina, and I was watering like some of my pots would, it gets really hot, like at least 2-3 times a day because it was just not. And then I dropped my pot into another pot, and then I actually put some soil between the two pots.
Ooh, even better idea.
And
yeah.
Oh, what a difference.
Now, I haven't done the soil in between. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah, I just put the soil in between. Yeah. It gives it a little bit extra barrier.
Sure.
And if I'm watering, I kind of water that too.
The whole thing.
The whole
sure.
thing. And
yeah.
It helps with coolness because I live a little bit farther inland.
Yes.
And we cook.
Yeah, for sure. Especially in the heat of the day when the sun is just barreling down on the sides of those pots. You touch them and they're hot to the touch. So. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, my hydrangeas tell me I'm not hydrangeas, excuse me. My dahlias tell me I'm thirsty. And the double potting has made such a difference.
Oh, good.
So thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, those are our tips. Of course, if you're going to be gone, like, you know, we're going to take a couple week trip, I will arrange with my gardener when he comes to do the regular gardening. I'll pay him a little extra so that he'll water all the pots and things that need hand watering. So that's an or get a neighborhood kid to come over and water for you. And then there are also devices. I'm thinking about buying a few of them that you that it kind of drip waters. They use different, like maybe a liter bottle, old liter bottle of soda, and then there's these pointy things that you put on them that have holes in that you stab into the ground, and then it slowly lets that water seep from that liter bottle into the pot. So there's devices if you
And I have one that I've
look it
been
up.
testing out, and I really like it. It's a self-watering. You fill it up with water from the top, and then you plant the plant in the inside, and as it needs it, it has a little gauge saying how much water is left.
Oh
So I
wow,
have a
cool.
really kind of inaccessible place. It's like a long way to carry. It's like my hose doesn't come there very easily, or carry a bucket. And I fill that thing up, and it's just been like, wow, this is really working. And everything has died there because I don't water it enough.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing you could look at. It's I forget what it's called, but it's you fill it up with I fill it up with a hose, and it holds quite a bit of water. And I have a dahlia sticking in
Yes.
there, and it's
You can
beautiful.
probably just Google, self-watering pots or, how to water pots when you're gone, and a whole bunch of these devices will pop up and you can find something that'll work for your situation, hopefully. So what other things should we talk about as far as, because we just want to do the bare minimum, maintenance this time of year. So in our veggie gardens, all I'm going to be doing is harvesting, weeding, continuing to tie up things that need to be tied up, because the tomatoes, the indeterminate tomatoes, never quit growing, so you forever need to tie those things up, right? Yes, that and adding a little bit more mulch. What are you doing in your veggie garden in terms of maintenance in these hot times?
Pretty much, I'm on top of water, deep watering. So I wanted everything to have deep roots, so I've done deep watering. And I do the same things. Part of it's by hand, of where I have to go, and I go make a little circle and start all over again. So I'm nice and deep and with the mulch, and just trying to keep things pest free and just maintenance, like you said.
Yeah. So for pests in the veggie garden, this is the time of year when if you're growing tomatoes, you'll probably see tomato hornworms. So do keep an eye out for those. And we'll tell you a little trick. If you go out and spray your plants in the morning with a hose, your tomato plants, and we usually tell you don't get the leaves wet because that encourages fungal disease. But if you suspect you have tomato hornworms and you can't see them because they're very camouflaged and match the leaf color, if you spray your leaves of your plant, the leaves of the tomato plant will turn darker, but the tomato hornworm won't have time to change its color to match. And so then you can see them. They just pop out.
Really? I've never had
You
one.
haven't, oh,
I've never had
I don't know
one.
how you cannot have them. Oh my
I've had
gosh.
everything else, but I've never had a hornworm.
That's crazy.
I
That's
know,
crazy.
yeah.
So anyway, that's one way to find them, and then you can hand pick them, which I like to do to get as many of them off as possible.
Now, do you
But
just do a light watering of the leaves, or do
just a
you?
light watering of the leaves, and I do it first thing in the morning because then the sun will dry it, right? In August, the leaves will be dry pretty quickly. So I do that. I hand pick them, but then I usually still spray with BT, Bacillus thuringiensis. Because if you have mature hornworms, odds are they've laid eggs somewhere and they're going to hatch. And so you're going to have a second generation. And so that's why I spray with BT, because the little tiny new ones are really hard to see. So if you spray with BT, then you're going to knock out the next generation, hopefully. So
And
that's.
also check your whatever watering system it is you have in your vegetable garden. In fact, check your watering system everywhere because now it's going. And if something's not working, you could have a dead plant really
Oh,
fast.
for sure. Yeah,
So it's not
absolutely.
forgiving this time of year. So just go out and whatever you have, just do it. Just do a check.
Yeah, for sure. And then the snails sort of subside, but if you see some, put more snail bait out. But as the weather gets hot, I see less and less snails.
See, I had so many a couple months ago.
And then we were talking about ants before
Oh.
before we started recording the show. And
I've had so many. It's like I think all of Southern California ants is like camping at my house.
I think everywhere is a giant anthill. And so Katrina was asking me, you know, what do you do? And I said, well, I hire a professional pest control service to spray around my house, but that I don't grow vegetables around, you know, the edges of the house. And I don't like to spray, even though they tell me it's safe. I just, where I'm going to eat stuff, I don't want them to spray. So I personally use the ant stakes because I do raised bed and pot growing. And then I just put in a couple of ant stakes in each bed and an ant stake in each pot, you know, where I have blueberries or tomatoes or whatever. And that, it's not foolproof, but it seems to keep them under control. So anyway, that's what I do.
Have you ever tried, I'm just asking you this, but have you ever tried diatomaceous earth?
You know, I did years ago, and it seemed to work for snails, but I'm not sure that it did as much as I was hoping for ants.
Yeah, I haven't tried it for ants either.
Yeah. So I know there are other solutions out there, and we probably should look at our pest control radio show and see what those folks had to say.
Exactly. And so if you're having these issues, because this is what we're probably going to go to,
exactly.
Look it up. Is we have a Master Garden radio show on pests.
Yes. And go to the University of California Master Gardener website, Master Gardeners of Orange County website, click on, you'll see an icon for radio show and click on it, and then it will give you a list of all the radio shows that we have in our vault. And you can look for the one that's called Pests or IPM, Integrated Pest Management, and get even more solutions than we have today. anything else you would do in the veggie garden this time of year?
Yeah, go early or go late in the day.
You know,
it's brutal out there right now.
Oh, I know the last thing I wanted to talk about. So I was talking about, you know, I'm going to be going on vacation, and I have one bed that's kind of half empty right now, and I'm not going to plant anything new because I'm going to be going on vacation and won't be here to baby it. And I'm thinking about, because the only stuff that's left is some carrots and zucchini, and I'm thinking about harvesting everything and emptying that bed entirely and then solarizing it while I'm gone. I'm going to lay black plastic down and solarize it, because...
And explain to people what solarizing means.
Yeah, so it uses the heat of the sun to kill any organisms in the soil that may have been giving you problems, any soil-borne diseases or fungi.
And how does that work? I mean, how do you do that?
What you do is you take all your plants out, and then you get a roll of, you know, the black plastic that might be used in construction. Or if it's a small area, you can just cut open a big black garbage bag and spread it out flat and hold it down with rocks or, you know, bent coat hangers, you know, turned into things that you can put in the plastic to hold it down so the wind doesn't blow it. And then you just leave it. You cover the whole area that you want to solarize and for a few weeks. And so I'm just thinking, while I'm on vacation, that's kind of a great time because I won't be here to plant anything or take care of anything. And then when I come back, hopefully organisms, either insects or fungi or other soil-borne pathogens, will have been killed. So I think I'm going to try that.
Do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and our gardens need to be rejuvenated every so often too.
Right. And then when I come back and the weather's cool enough in October to plant some cool season stuff, I will add new compost and fertilizer and till the soil and get ready to plant.
And you clean out your bed at that point in time. And...
I clean out the bed before I solarize. You know, I just take everything out because you want a flat area for this plastic to lay on top of. So it'll be kind of nice because then I'll have a bed that's, you know, just ready to be refreshed with mulch and with compost and fertilizer and ready to plant, I hope. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So let's move out to the flower beds. So there, you know, for the roses, I just deadhead and fertilize, keep fertilizing, right?
Right.
Because we get roses till Christmas if the weather's good.
Well, wait a second. I've seen your roses 12 months a year here.
That's true. That's true.
How did she ever cut those back? Because they're blooming all the time.
In January, they get pruned, whether they like it or not.
I've seen your roses in January just full-on bloom. I'm like, oh, my God, she's a master gardener.
Yeah, well, I choose roses that are kind of idiot-proof, so those are the ones that are blooming. But this time of year, because I do love having roses, you know, over the holidays, right, when you've got guests over for Thanksgiving, how nice is it to have some roses blooming? So I do keep deadheading and fertilizing, you know, probably up to October, and then I stop so that they can kind of slow down. But some of them just keep on trucking.
They're happy.
And then as far as other flowers, it's mostly just a deadheading game, you know. If you've got...
deadheading, cutting back.
Exactly. You've got your dahlias, so I'm sure you're deadheading your dahlias, so you keep getting more.
I try to go out in the garden almost every... Well, I go out every morning.
Yeah.
Between the vegetable and the other, and then we have a gardener, a Samoan blow gardener.
Right.
So he comes on Thursdays. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I whack.
Oh.
And I leave the mess for him because he'll pick it up for me.
I are soul sisters that way. My husband says, why are you leaving all that stuff? And I'm like, because I don't want to pick it up and the gardeners will.
So he mows and blows and pick up the stuff, and that's our deal. And
yep.
You know, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I don't touch. I've done it for the week, and I now enjoy my garden the way it looks. And
exactly. No, it's a great strategy. So we encourage everyone to copy us. But yeah, it's great. It gets you out in the garden, and then the work isn't so tedious that you are like, I don't want to get out there. Because if you can just cut and leave it for someone else to pick up, it's a lot easier.
And you know what I find I do this time of year too is I'm out either real early in the morning, or I wait till the sun passes. I live on a hill, so it's a little cooler in the early evening.
Yeah.
And then go out because the heat, it's hard enough as it is, and the heat of the day, it's just unbearable.
It's brutal. And also, I don't think the plants appreciate being messed with,
yeah.
You know, when it's that hot. You certainly don't want to harvest when it's that hot. You yeah. know, you want to harvest when the plants are full of moisture, which is first thing in the morning.
I have my little bucket, and I take my little bucket down, and I harvest every morning. And it's just kind of wholesome. Yeah, I'm just eating from your garden.
Well, and I think it's good for your brain, too, right? You start the day out doing something peaceful and calming, and sets the tone for the rest of your day. Yeah. So that's what we're going to talk about for maintenance. I don't think that we want to plant anything this month.
No.
Unless you live right along the coast, and then you could if you wanted to. But there is something that we should be planting in August.
And she's smiling.
Because I love this. It's seeds, and it's counterintuitive that you would be planting cool season plants in August, but if you're going to grow things from seed and want them ready to go in the garden in October, you got to count back 8 weeks. So probably around mid-August or the end of August, you want to start planting your little seeds in little six packs.
Now, let's talk vegetables first.
Mm-hmm.
What vegetables do you like to plant from seeds?
So for the fall, I love to plant the root vegetables and the leafy vegetables from seed, but those are best if you just direct sow them. So don't bother planting them in six packs. Just wait until the end of October, the latter half of October, get your soil ready and just direct sow right in the garden where you're going to plant your lettuce and root vegetables like carrots and beets. But if you want to grow cool crops, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, those sorts of things, those are the things you should be starting from seed now. Brussels sprouts are so fun to grow. They grow in that long, long stalk and have those little mini cabbages up and down the stalk. Those are super fun to grow. And the reason that you might want to start from seed is you can get varieties that you can't get from the nursery.
Absolutely. I mean, that is one of the only reasons why I'll do it from seed is because I can't find it in the nursery. If it's something I can find in the nursery, I just buy a six pack.
Exactly.
But if there's so many things you cannot get by seed. I mean, in the nursery.
In the nursery. For instance, if you garden with kids in particular and you want kids to eat vegetables and try new vegetables, try planting purple carrots instead of just orange carrots. You know, they'll get so excited to have a purple carrot. If you want to try the different colored cauliflowers, right? There's purple cauliflower, there's orange cauliflower. It's just fun to have these things in your garden. I like to get the small varieties of cabbage, you know, the ones that just grow the small heads, mm-hmm. because my husband and I can't eat a whole head of cabbage, right? It's just too much. And so
ferment
I like
it. Ferment it.
You make the sauerkraut out of it?
I make the sauerkraut. It's so easy to make. I'll tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
It's so easy to make, and you have probiotics in it. And then you'll have, because it lasts so long, you'll actually have cabbage when it's no longer in season.
Okay, I got to do that because my great-grandparents came from Germany, so you would think I would know how to make sauerkraut, but I don't. You'll have to teach me.
my grandparents are, you know, like my father's first language was German.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so everybody spoke German, but, you know, I didn't learn how to do it. I learned it from Master Gardener, Master Food Preservers.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't think I liked sauerkraut until I, you know.
Made your own.
Made our own. It's so different, so I'll send you the recipe.
Good. Okay, so now I don't need to grow the small cabbages anymore. but anyway, if you want to have a fun time growing things from seed and try some new varieties of things you can't get at the nursery, give it a try. I suggest investing in a tiny little bit of equipment. You can just use six packs that you have saved from when you bought plants at the nursery, but there are seed starter kits, and I like those because the cells usually have, you know, some other number of there might be 10 down and 5 across, you know, in this kit. Or there are little square kits that are maybe, you know, 5 cells across and 5 cells down. But what's cool about them is they come with a tray so mm-hmm. that when you water, it can collect the water in the bottom so you don't have to worry about, you know, because you're going to want to start these inside. You don't want to subject them to the extreme heat at this time of year. So you want to start them inside. So you got to make sure that you're choosing a way to do it that's not going to damage your furniture and so on and so forth. So they're not that expensive. So I would invest in a little seed starting kit, and it usually comes with the cells and the tray that you put it in. And then often they come with a little plastic topper or dome.
Mm-hmm.
That and the reason that's a good thing to have is while you're waiting for the seeds to germinate, it keeps the humidity in, and seeds germinate quicker if they have even humidity. And then I also usually try to find a seed starting mix. You can use regular potting soil, but it sometimes has some coarse kinds of pieces in there. And so if you can find seed starting mix, it's a very fine mixture. And so I usually buy a fresh bag of either seed starting mix or potting soil because you don't want to use an open bag because you don't know what's gotten in there and has started to grow. So you don't want to contaminate those little new plants by any sort of fungus that might be in a used, you know, a bag that's been sitting open. But I think we need to take a break, don't we?
Yes. Well, what we need to do is let everybody know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. So that was our little commercial break, and now we can talk about gardening again.
Yeah, so we'll finish chatting about seed starting. So yes, you've got your seed starting kit, or you can use washed out six packs, but be sure you wash them in soapy water, and then I like to spray them with a spray bottle that has one part bleach to 10 parts water, just to make sure that any you know, contamination from the previous plants has been killed. Or you can use, you can even use egg cartons, and we probably all did that as kids, right? Put soil in egg cartons and planted seeds. The difficulty with that is the egg cartons don't hold a lot of soil, and so you have to be really careful that they aren't drying out, you know, quickly.
Or get root bound.
Or get root bound. So it's not my first choice to use those, but you can. Yeah.
Or you could be like my husband, just wait. It's good enough stuff in the nursery, and we'll buy them, and they're ready to put in the ground.
There you go.
So there's something for everybody. I did a lot of seeds this year because I wanted to have things I couldn't get. But it is more work, you know.
It is more work.
And if you have time and energy and you want to do it, it's great. But if you don't, you could just buy those six packs, and you're set and ready to go. So I think there's something for everybody.
Yeah, and the ready-grown starts are usually sturdier, because if you start your own inside, once they get to a certain height, you want to take them outside in a sheltered place, like under a patio cover, and let them what's called harden off, because they have to adjust to the outdoor climate before you plant them right in the ground.
Oh, and guess what happens if you don't do that?
I don't know, Katrina. Did you find that out?
Uh-oh. I burned those little guys, all of them.
I'm like, wow, that really happened quickly.
Yeah, they're babies.
They're babies. A little sensitive.
We fried them, so lesson learned.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do it once, you'll know.
Right.
But so you don't have to do it once, just learn from us.
So seed starting can be a little bit challenging, but I also think it's super rewarding. So I love to do it.
I do too.
Yeah.
I love getting, you know, this summer I grew some Romanesca.
Oh, nice.
Oh, the taste of that, but they don't sell them in the store. They don't produce as much. They're a little bit slower growing. You just don't get them in the store. And the only way you're going to get this is by planting it yourself.
Yep.
And that's in both summer and winter crops. Certain things that you just cannot get that you just really want. It's just,
well, Katrina and I grow kale. We eat a lot of kale, and we each have our personal favorites. And some years the nursery carries all of the varieties of kales, and then other times, you know, all I can find is the Tuscan kale.
Yeah.
And I like the blue curly kale. So if that's the case.
And I like cosmic kale,
yeah,
which is impossible to find. I've never found it in the store.
And so in that case, if you can't find what you like and you know what you like, order the seeds, you know, and grow your blue curly kale yourself.
You could have lots of blue curly kale with a package of seeds.
Sure. And that is the other thing about seeds, is that they are super cheap. You know, you get a packet of seed for $3 or so, $3 to $4. And, you know, you can probably grow, you know, 3 dozen plants or more. But of course, most of our yards aren't big enough for 3 dozen plants. So, you know, in the end, is it really that much cheaper than buying a six pack that's already started?
I don't look at it as being cheaper because I don't plant as many as all I could plant, or I'd have no room for anything in my garden.
Right.
But it's just, for me, it's the variety.
It is. And for me, the variety in the vegetables isn't, it's important, but it's the variety in the flowers. Garden
that you keeps taught me that one too.
Keeps me growing from seed, because I love tall flowers, because I have a pretty big garden. Katrina loves tall flowers because she has an even bigger garden. And if we don't plant tall flowers, you can't see them, because you plant the little short ones and they kind of disappear in our gardens. And so I love stock, for instance, which is a cool season annual. And you cannot find tall stock in the nurseries. You just can't find it. It's called Imperial. And so every year I have to order the seeds of the Imperial Giants, because that's the stock I want. I don't want the stock that's 12 inches tall. I want the stock that's 3 feet tall. So that is what I mostly plant from seeds. I do a few veggies, but I do snapdragons, because even though there's a million snapdragons in the nurseries, they're all short.
And the reason for that is that when you go into a nursery, you want to see something blooming and see what it looks like. And when they're short, it's easy to buy them and they're colorful and like, oh, I want this, versus if they're tall, it takes longer. And all you see is the green.
Exactly.
And so, but I love, because I like you, I like layering, you know, taller in the back. Mm-hmm. And from a distance, it looks really nice. And I like bigger blooms too. So it just, you know, everybody's different, but Tina and I both like certain things that you could only buy in seed packages, and they're cheap, and you go to a seed catalog, and Tina can spend hours, I can too, in a seed catalog, decisions, and you buy a little too much. But then you get to plant them, and then you reap the benefits of that beautiful stalk that's so tall, and people are like, where did you get this?
Oh, yeah, and... The snapdragons, if you've never seen or grown tall snapdragons, one of my favorites is Rocket. And the other reason I like Rocket is because it is rust resistant. And you know how bad snapdragons are about getting rust. And this one eventually gets rust, because they all do. But this one delays the onset of the rust. And they get as tall as me. So they're, you know, 5 feet tall. I'm a little over 5 feet, but they're as tall as me. And they come in different colors. And that's the other reason I plant from seed, is often when you go to a nursery, it will say, because I can find Rocket snapdragons, but they're always mixed. Always mixed colors.
Always.
And one thing that makes your garden look cohesive is swaths of color. So not just, you know, one yellow, one red, one pink, one white. That it's pretty. It can be pretty, but it looks very busy, you know, noisy. Whereas if you have a swath of pink snapdragons, tall snapdragons, that goes on for 6 feet maybe, that's stunning. You know, you can see it from your patio, from your windows, and you've just got this beautiful swath of color.
And for me, I have everything's a distant view in my yard because it's bigger, is it all fades together. So if I have a whole one color, it makes a statement.
There you go.
Yeah. You know, it's not blurry anymore, and it looks like one big flower. You know, it's just pretty.
It is. I think it's, I'm not a designer. That's not my talent, but we have, I think, been trained enough to understand that layering is good in the garden, and colors that complement each other or flow from one color to the next is good, as opposed to what I'm inclined to do when I go to a nursery, say, oh, I'll have one of those. Oh, I'll have one of those. Oh, I'll have one of those. And then you get home and you're just kind of plopping them everywhere, and it can be a little crazy looking if... if you aren't careful.
Yeah, we both have done that. It's so hard when you go to the nursery, you know, you just want everything, and then you go, where am I going to put this?
It's candy.
But it's like a candy store. When you lay it out, it's just so much prettier. And when you said layering, Tina, I don't think everybody could see your hands. So what you would say by layering is something taller in the back and a little bit shorter, and then the smallest in the front. So you get to see everything that in the garden. And like she said, if you don't buy some of the seeds, you can't get that tall three-dimension look.
Right, for sure. And just to go through a couple other choices, we mentioned stock and snapdragons. Calendulas, also called pot marigold, come in yellows and oranges, and that's a lower-growing annual. Also an edible flower, so that's a fun one to grow from seed, and super easy to grow from seed.
So you could pop it on your dinner plate.
Yes, yes, and sprinkle the petals in a salad, really kind of fun. Cineraria is another one that is great to grow from seed, a cool season plant, very low growing, so you'd want to put it in the front of your beds, but it's just got these beautiful bright colors. And then Iceland poppies, kind of a medium size flower, and very graceful. You know, they're
beautiful, elegant
shades of yellows, green, yellows and oranges, for the most part. So anyway, those are some of the cool season flowers that I like to grow from seed.
And if you don't, you can go to catalogs.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
There's online catalogs.
For sure.
And you could just go and just kind of put it together, you know.
Oh, and try new stuff, yeah. You know. It's super fun to try new things, I think, at least I love to. Now, you know, pansies and primroses and violas are also cool season plants, but I personally don't plant those from seed because there's such a huge selection of those in the nursery. You know, that's a lot of what you see in the wintertime is tons of pansies and violas. So you can do those from seeds as well, but I like to choose the things that are hard to find if I'm going to, you know, do the effort to grow them from seed. So I think that's all we want to plant though. Just the cool season things. Look at the seed packet. It will tell you the number of days to maturity. And so if it says for a vegetable, for instance, you know, 60 days to harvest, then you know you're going to want to plant that seed 60 days, you know, before you want to plant it out in the garden. You know, you want it or at least four to 6 weeks before so that it has time to grow in your garden. And then harvest.
I have another hint on this. Make sure you label what you put in those little seed packages.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I talk to so many people, they say, I don't know what I have in here. I just bought seeds and planted them, and they're like, is it vegetables?
Oh, no.
Is it vegetables?
Oh, no.
Is it flowers? And so I find that using painter's tape, you could write whatever it is and stick it on what you're doing.
Oh, on the six pack, if you're using a six pack?
Six pack.
Yeah.
Or even on the trays. I've done it on the trays, like row one through five is this.
Oh,
you know,
good
five
idea.
To ten is this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think I'm going to remember it. And now.
Yeah, the other thing that I do, that's a great idea and probably better for the environment. But one of the other things that I do is I always, when you buy plastic silverware, right, you always use all the forks. Mm-hmm. And then I hardly, the knives are always left over and a bunch of the spoons. And so I will take those leftover knives and spoons and get a Sharpie marker. Mm-hmm. And I'll write on the knives or the spoons what it is
nice.
That I'm growing. Yeah. And then what I do is I put the name of it. So, for instance, if I say Imperial Stock, then I flip the knife over and on the back side, I put the day that I sowed the seed. So you know, sowed it August 20th. And then I know that 6 weeks from then it should be ready to be planted in the garden or however long, mm-hmm. you know, the particular seed says. So yeah, but good point about labeling them. Or you could just have a surprise.
I've had that before.
Well, we still have some time left, and I think the other thing we probably should talk about is fire.
Oh, definitely.
Because sadly, we've already had a few, you know, fires, pretty decent-sized fires in the state, but we all know that come August, September, and October, the whole state seems to burn up. And so we want to be sure that we're at least in our own homes as protected as we can be. So we'll talk about a few things to do. The first thing is to make sure you have defensible space, which means that basically you've removed any plants that are combustible, and particularly if you are like Katrina and I and live adjacent to open space, you want to make sure you've got that 100 feet clear of any brush or grasses that are dried out so that if that fire comes your way, you at least have space where it has to slow down before it can get to your house. There are lists in many places on the internet that you can just Google, you know, firewise plants for Southern California, and a whole lot of different lists will come up and will advise you on things that you might want to plant on those areas of your home. So the old ice plant, right? Remember, remember freeway ice plant
I sure do.
that we all grew up with? I know maybe it's not our favorite plant, but if you've got a side of your property that's adjacent to, open space, some sort of succulent type plant is always a good choice because those don't burn.
You know what we've been really conscious of this year is underbrush.
Oh, sure.
We live up in the hills and we have spent a lot of time trimming trees, making sure trees are so many feet away from the house, it's not touching the house.
Absolutely.
Debris on our hillside, which is, you don't really go on it, but the hillside is now really tidied up. Just where you have excess. Just clean it up.
Yeah, that's a great point. So we have a slope in the back of our yard, and it's hard to get things to grow on the slope, right? Because it's hard to irrigate up there. And so over time, a fair bit of the stuff that was planted up there initially has not made it. And I have not replanted because what has made it, we have some toyon up there, which is a native. So it And some lemonade berry, another native, and they don't need as much water. We have a couple oaks, but what has ended up happening, which is a good idea, is that these remaining plants, are spaced apart from one another. And so then, if you keep the brush, weeds, grasses, whatever, and you just, have your gardener or yourself go up and weed whack, and then you only have an oak tree, and then you've got 20 feet of space, and then there's a toyon, and then you've got 20 feet of space, and then there's, whatever. You have made your landscape a little more fireproof by being sparsely planted, and as you say, not have that understory planting that can be tinder to get up into those trees.
And look at the trees are touching your house and how far away they are from your house.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Just what do you have around your house?
Yeah.
Because the new thing is you're talking about not planting next to your house,
Exactly. I
which is hard for
know.
me.
It is. And we still have a couple, we've taken out the big trees that were next to the house, but we still have a couple of small ones that we have now just trimmed, so that they're very narrow. Because my husband doesn't want to take them out, but I figure at least it's way less fuel by keeping them, trimmed very narrowly and not letting them get this great big
Canopy.
canopy. Hopefully that's a little bit better, but ideally we probably should take them out.
It's picking and choosing too.
Yeah.
We've taken out a lot
Oh,
of
so have
trees.
we. Ugh.
We've taken like 140 trees out.
No way. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh.
Well, we live on an acre and a half, right? So we
Yeah.
live up in the hills, and for some reason, years ago, they planted a windbreak of eucalyptus.
Oh, geez, and those go up like
They
torches.
go up like, and when we saw the fire, like fire coming over the hill, and we're watching this from our living room, like those trees are gone. So we have really, really, really have, we've had so many fires nearby that I've been brutal on taking out trees. And it's still beautiful. You can have a beautiful yard,
Yes.
and we still have a lot of trees because I have a big yard, but it's what kind of trees do you have? How far away is it? How combustible are they? What's the underbrush? Are they close to the house? Which way does the wind blow? There's a lot of things to go out and look at it. And there's a lot of wonderful things on the internet too, a lot about making your yard safe.
Yes,
And
absolutely.
I'm told that the insurance companies are now looking at Google Maps. And then they also will send drones out to check on your roof and what do you have around your
Yeah.
property. So this year we've been really, really mindful. Even though we thought we were good, we went back and we've done more and more and more. And how do you keep a beautiful garden?
Right.
And we've been able to do that by just being a little smarter.
Yeah, and you also have to change your thinking a little bit because, as we talk about mulch earlier in the show, which is great for conserving water and keeping your soil temp regulated. You don't want to mulch with a flammable mulch like bark chips if you're up against open space. absolutely not. Now, if you're in a suburban area, you know, and you, there's not, you know, hills of brush nearby you, you know, no, fine to mulch with, you know, bark chips. And, but me, I don't mark with or mulch with bark chips anymore along the side of my property, where I'm adjacent to open space.
I didn't realize how combustible they were.
Yeah.
And was it the 2017 fires? We were up in the hills and our neighborhood was, you could not, everybody was evacuated. And I was over at a neighbor's house for 2.5 hours. They were gone. And they did a beautiful mulching of all their trees. And I sat there with two hoses because their mulch caught on fire.
Yeah.
And it was, they got it right up to next to their house.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if they knew that we were, I was there with two hoses just watering the mulch. So
yeah.
Be careful on what you do.
Right. So I mulched the vegetable garden, which is, you know, way away from the open space. And mulch a couple of flower beds that are away from the open space. But I don't mulch anything near the open space because we don't want to risk that all being fuel.
Yeah.
So anyway, do a little bit of research and a little bit of work. And as Katrina said, you know, be sure you have trees away from your house or trimmed up so that the branches aren't hanging over your house, touching your house. And do the best that you can to keep your home safe. And if you have areas that need to be replanted, consider planting succulents, you know, things that aren't going to catch on fire.
I have a succulent bed that is just gorgeous. And it's probably about 40 feet long. And it's tall in the back and, you know, the whole thing. And then it drapes over. It's about 3 feet high and it drapes over into the driveway. And I've loved it so much, the back of my house where the wind comes up that would be blowing fire. I have beds right next to the back of the house. And I have now turned it into succulents.
Great.
And it's really pretty. You know, I have some pots there. I have some planted in the ground. And it's butted up against my house. And a couple things. One, I'm getting older. And I have so much to take care of anyways. And this is so low maintenance. And two, with fires.
Yeah.
It's succulents against the house. You know,
good idea.
They're full of water.
Yeah.
And they're pretty. They're really, it's just, you know, I'm looking at how do I garden, also how do I garden as I age?
Oh, for sure.
You know, how do I garden as I age? And so these succulents have just been, and I don't have succulents everywhere, but I have them several beds that just make it perfect. And now we're talking about fires. It's just like, what else would I want next to my house?
Right. And also consider, you know, if you have wood decks, and they're getting of an age where they need to be replaced, consider replacing them with something other than wood, you know, some sort of non-flammable material, just to add a little bit more safety to the whole
place. And then the venting of the houses, you know, our house is old and those attic vents, the codes have changed.
Oh.
So we did a radio show on fireproofing your property. So you might also look at our list of shows available because there's a whole hour dedicated.
For sure.
And it was done with the fire department, fire
authority.
Fire authority.
I forgot we had that one.
And one of the things I learned in that show was I went and replaced all my venting because they were big. It blows through. You know the ones that I'm talking about
in
your attic?
Yeah.
Change the size. It's cheap. It's easy.
Wow.
Because most fires are started in your attic.
Wow. I'm going to check that out.
Houses burn from the inside out, the majority of them.
Yeah.
And that's where they get the fire goes into the attic and then starts your house on fire. So little things. Go listen to that show if you're interested. I learned a lot. It was great.
Well, to end the show on a more positive note, August is the time to do fun stuff like get seed catalogs and decide what you're going to plant in the cool season. And it's time to go on vacation or to the beach and just a little bit of time in your garden in the early morning hours when it's cool. Otherwise, just have a great summer.
Exactly. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Tina.
Okay, until September, this is Tina and Katrina in the Garden.